Morris Arboretum supports WHYY and encourages visitors to enjoy a last gasp of summer. The cooling power of trees and bubbling fountains provide a welcome respite. Patrick Daugherty's 25-foot-tall towers made of sticks and the garden railway at Morris Arboretum make an ideal visit for families. Located in Chestnut Hill, Morris Arboretum celebrates the end of summer. MorrisArboretum.org or 215-247-5777.
If you think this summer's been hot, get ready for a sobering forecast. I'm Brad Linder, and this is NewsWorks Tonight. Dave Heller's off this evening. Average temperatures in Pennsylvania are expected to rise by 5.4 degrees by 2050. State Impact Pennsylvania's Susan Phillips reports on how all this heat will change everything.
Scientists from Penn State call that 5.4 degree Fahrenheit rise startling. The figure comes from the state's newest climate change assessment. Mandated by state law, it's prepared every couple of years by Penn State University. Department of Environmental Protection Secretary John Quigley called this latest report stark.
This changes everything, and it's going to change our economy, our environment. It's going to change public health. It will change our quality of life. So the Pennsylvania that we know and live in today is not the Pennsylvania that our children and grandchildren will live in.
Trees now common in Pennsylvania forests will be gone, replaced by plants from down south. Growing seasons will lengthen, which could help farmers, but the heat could also harm the state's dairy industry. More rain will fall, reducing droughts, but increasing floods in both rural and urban areas. Snowfall will not be able to support the state's ski industry. Heating bills will go down in winter, but the report says those cost savings will be more than offset by increased need for air conditioning. Trout will not be able to survive in warmer streams, and water quality will suffer from increased runoff. The report did not endorse any particular policy for dealing with rising temperatures. Secretary Quigley says he's hoping people use the official public comment period to submit ideas for how to adapt. I'm Susan Phillips, State Impact, Pennsylvania.
Yesterday, the New Jersey Supreme Court ruled that young people living in the state who had entered the U.S. illegally have the right to apply for legal residence if they can show they were abused in their home country. There's a federal program that can provide amnesty to eligible people under the age of 21 on a case-by-case basis. But first, a state court needs to determine whether they were abused or neglected and whether it's in their best interest to stay in the U.S. And that's the part of the process that the New Jersey State Supreme Court weighed in on Wednesday. Sal Rizzo of the Bergen County Record and NorthJersey.com has been covering the case, and he joins us on NewsWorks tonight to figure out what the ruling means. Thanks for speaking with us.
Happy to be here. Thanks.
First, could you tell us a little bit more about this program? How does it work, and who's it supposed to help?
It's run by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, and it's basically targeted at a very small subset of immigrant children, those who can prove that if they go back home to their home countries, they would be going back home to a violent parent, an abusive parent, a parent who can't care for them, or who have no one to go back to when they go back to their home country. And so this isn't, you know, we're not talking about a border wall on the southern border. We're not talking about, you know, mass emigration from anywhere. We're just talking about abused children who, if they go back home, they don't have anyone to care for them. That's who it's targeted at. And so the setup works this way. You know, first you go to a state judge, and that judge has to make a finding whether you were abused, neglected, or abandoned in your home country, and whether it's in your best interest to stay in the United States. They then must send those two, you know, surveys that they do for each kid to the federal government. And Homeland Security decides whether to approve or deny this application.
And in this particular case dealt with three individuals who had entered the U.S. illegally and said it would be unsafe to return to their home countries. What do we know about them?
One young man came from India. He lived in the slums there. We don't know what part of India. He only had his mother to care for him. At some point, the mother became ill, very ill. They moved in with grandma. This young man, who is known only as MS, his initials, had to take a construction job in India. It was very taxing, his lawyers say. He worked sometimes 75 hours a week. He developed back problems. He developed a skin condition. And then he went on this sort of fascinating odyssey. He went to Turkey. He took a boat to Mexico. He walked across the U.S.-Mexico border, made his way up to Passaic County. His uncle is a U.S. citizen who lives in Passaic, has a family, is a tax driver in New York City, and he now lives with them. He crossed the border when he was 16. He's now 20, to give you an idea of how slow-moving this process has been for a lot of these people. And, you know, I mean, the Supreme Court really seemed to take his side yesterday, although they didn't come out and say he should be granted, you know, legal immigration status, the court went, you know, a little bit farther than it usually does in saying, well, we find that based on the record, he was neglected at home. So that's one of the key findings that the federal government is asking for, that the Supreme Court gave it to him, which will help his case. The other two girls are from El Salvador. They crossed when they were 11 and 15 years old, so they were substantially younger, at least the younger child. One of these girls was raped by a gang member in El Salvador, according to her lawyers. Their father, whom they lived with in El Salvador, was murdered, apparently, by another gang member. And so their mother, who lives in Elizabeth and has lived here for a number of years, she now has the girls at home, but they're facing deportation. So, you know, you get the picture that although we don't know their identities, these are kids who have been through a lot.
So there are tens of thousands of unaccompanied minors that have been placed with families in the U.S. after entering the country illegally, and about 3,500 of them in New Jersey. But this ruling wouldn't affect all 3,500. It would just affect a small fraction. Do we know how many people would be affected by this ruling?
I think it would be very difficult to put a number on it. You know, there are 3,500 kids in New Jersey who are facing deportation. Only the ones who can, because not all of them were abused in their home countries, so only the ones who can prove abuse and only the ones who otherwise might be returned to an abusive parent back home, only those kids apply. You know, some lawyers said that might be a couple hundred. And so it's a very small, limited number.
And is New Jersey unique, or have other states had these sorts of problems, and has it gone to the Supreme Courts in other states?
Apparently, the New York courts, the Minnesota courts, and I believe there's another state have ruled, have all ruled on this. It's important to see that the New Jersey court even ruled on this, because the way that they're structuring, their opinion, they're saying, whenever anyone at the state level is looking at this issue, you know, here's a good roadmap to see how to weigh the state part of it, the family law part of it, and the federal part of it, the immigration part of it. So some lawyers believe that this will be good guidance for states, even outside New Jersey.
Sal Rizzo is a staff writer with the Bergen County Record and NorthJersey.com. Thanks again for joining us on NewsWorks Tonight.
Thank you.
Taking a look at today's headlines, eligible Pennsylvanians can now go online to register to vote. The Commonwealth is the 23rd state to offer internet-based registration. Pennsylvania's Secretary of State Pedro Cortez says the change will cut costs and reduce errors that happen when clerks transfer information to the voter rolls from handwritten forms. The online form can be accessed at register.votespa.com. Those wishing to register the old way can still fill out a paper form. Daryl Dawkins, whose backboard-shattering dunks earned him the moniker Chocolate Thunder and helped pave the way for breakaway rims, has died. He was 58. The Lehigh County, Pennsylvania coroner's office says the former 76ers star died this morning at a hospital. No cause of death was immediately announced, and an autopsy is scheduled for tomorrow. A major labor union is urging organized labor to boycott Atlantic City casinos that are associated with billionaire Carl Icahn. The New Jersey State AFL-CIO wants union members to stay away from the Tropicana, which Icahn owns, and the Trump Taj Mahal, which he's in the process of acquiring. Checking the WHYY forecast, partly cloudy with a low around 62 degrees tonight. Tomorrow, sunny with a high around 85 degrees. Tomorrow night, mostly clear with a low near 64. Saturday, partly cloudy with a high near 87 degrees. Sunday, partly sunny and hot with a high around 92. And Monday, more sunshine with a high near 93 degrees. Still ahead, using everything from yoga to healthy eating to recover from breast cancer treatments.
Another little tip is looking at the ingredient list and thinking, can I buy all of these ingredients in the store? And if there are ingredients I can't buy in the store, then I think, well, they're not real foods.
We profile the group Unite for Her as NewsWorks Tonight continues.
Hey, what's up? I'm Shad. Stieg Larsson, author of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo, died just over a decade ago. Now, David Lagercrantz is reviving the series with a new book. Next time on Q, I'll talk to him about continuing another writer's work. That's coming up on Q from PRI, Public Radio International.
Tonight at 9 on WHYY. Supporting WHYY, Comcast NBC Universal. Since 2011, more than 2 million low-income people have benefited from low-cost, high-speed internet through the Internet Essentials program. Learn more at ComcastCorporation.com/IE.
Supporting WHYY is Phil Abundance, providing hunger relief to residents of Pennsylvania and New Jersey since 1984. More than 1 million people in our area face hunger. More information on helping to feed our neighbors in need is available at philabundance.org.
When it comes to wildfires out on the West Coast, it is not a matter of if, but rather when.
I don't worry about El Nino coming. I don't worry about an earthquake. But fire is the devastating event that will happen out here.
I'm Kai Rizdal. Imminent fires. How do you get ready? Story next time on Marketplace from APN.
Coming up next on WHYY.
Welcome back to NewsWorks Tonight. I'm Brad Linder in for Dave Heller. A large sinkhole that could have easily swallowed a car or two opened up in North Philadelphia earlier this week. It's a phenomenon that's happened more than 2,000 times in the city so far this year. That's nearly one for every mile of roadway in Philadelphia. WHYY's Bobby Allen looked into what causes sinkholes and why they're so prevalent here.
James Stuckey is a delivery man at Franco's Pizza at the corner of Tulip and East Huntington Streets, looking out at crews repairing a giant hole in the road in front of the Kensington Pizza Shop. This was his description.
Yeah, you could fit a choir in there, yeah, definitely. Or a truck. Looks like a meteorite hit it.
City officials say a water main break was the culprit. The pipes, they date to 1886. Laura Turan is a geologist at Temple University.
We developed some of the first sewer systems. We were ahead of our time, and now we're paying the price for that.
Before getting to what's causing sinkholes, let's back up and explain the difference between potholes and sinkholes. Potholes happen on the top layer of the road and go as deep as 10 inches. Sinkholes, that's when the dirt and rock under the road collapses like quicksand. Turan says in old cities like Philadelphia, busting pipes often trigger a sinkhole to open, but not always. They sometimes start with cracks deep in the ground that began millions of years ago. But the earth is now giving in more than it has in recent years. City records show that there have been more than 2,000 sinkholes this year. That's up 20% from last year, with four more months to go.
We attributed the large increase in the number of cave-ins we're having to extreme bouts of cold weather that we're having.
Philadelphia Streets Commissioner David Perry notes that 2015 also had some of the coldest recorded weeks in the city's history. Water freezes deep in the roads, creating ice formations that push away soil. If the ice takes up enough space when it melts, it can be destructive. Turan from Temple likens what's above that melted space to a bridge.
Freeze-thaw cycles, they weaken, just like they weaken and create potholes, they can weaken these bridges that are over existing openings. So you might not have a specific event, but year after year after year, and finally the last straw, and something will collapse.
Geologists have done autopsies of Philadelphia, and here's what they found. Down to as far as 30 feet is what they call urban fill, and it's composed of all sorts of stuff.
We find doll arms. I mean, it can pots and bricks and foundations, and then regular soil.
You'll find lots of different types of stone down there, like Wissahickon rocks, where shiny mica comes from, used in buildings, asphalt, and roof shingles. It's generally not as prone to sinkholes as, say, limestone, which dissolves more quickly. Streets Commissioner Perry says Philadelphia is lucky not to be underlain with limestone. Not so with some communities in our region. The King of Prussia area is under a limestone patch. In 2011, a 75-foot sinkhole opened there. Limestone swaths cut through Harrisburg and Allentown, too, but largely bypass Philly. But nowhere in Pennsylvania compares to the amount of limestone found in Florida. Officials there call sinkholes a fact of life.
This is not Florida, where our cave-ins are swallowing whole houses and vehicles. That's not a phenomenon you're going to find in Philadelphia. These things are a nuisance, but they are not the type of thing that you need to worry about that you're going to fall into an underground cave beneath the city streets.
The city's water department is working on replacing some of its Grover Cleveland-era pipes at a pace of 22 miles per year. But there's more than 3,100 miles of pipes, so it will take some time. As for the factors city officials can't control, cold weather and ancient rock movements, they'll continue to conspire against Philadelphia and cause sinkholes. But Perry says the vast majority of them are manageable, about 3 by 3 feet. Not capable of swallowing a car, but maybe a small dog. For WHYY News, I'm Bobby Allen.
A Philadelphia area program called Unite for Her helps women look after themselves as they recover from the effects of breast cancer surgery and treatments. It's serving about 1,000 women this year, its seventh since operations began, all supported by contributions and fundraisers that now bring in more than $1 million annually. Howard Shapiro, who you usually hear as theater blogger for Newsworks Tonight, talked with Sue Weldon, who founded Unite for Her, and Katie Cavuto, its chief nutritionist, who works with the women it serves.
When Sue Weldon, a former gymnastics coach, was diagnosed with breast cancer 11 years ago, she had to search for people who could make her feel better while she was undergoing surgery and chemotherapy.
During that time, I was just like this machine of doing research and trying to understand who I could connect to. And then amazing what's out there when you find it, you know, when you get to the right people.
Her own research indicated that she needed acupuncture, yoga, and some techniques involving nutrition.
Nutrition was key. I mean, food was truly my medicine during that time. And I remember being told just to get down whatever you could eat. And it was amazing how food could help me with the side effects and symptoms I was having.
Weldon says she was able to get to the right people for the right services. Sometime later, she was at an event where she spotted a woman with a scarf on her head, a recovering cancer patient undergoing chemo, Weldon thought. The two struck up a conversation.
And I told her all the acupuncture, the yoga, the nutrition, the massage therapy, all these modalities that I was using at different parts of my treatment and healing. And she just got a tear in her eye and said, I could never afford that. I could never do all that.
That's when Sue Weldon decided to start a nonprofit.
We started in one hospital in 2010 with a Wellness Day program, our outreach program, where we impacted 30 women. Now, fast forward, 2014, we're partnering with over 11 hospitals, soon to be 14 hospitals, and we are reaching over 1,000 women.
Women are invited to these wellness days by the navigators or point people who work with their surgeons to guide the women through their surgeries. Wellness days are single-day workshops with professionals about acupuncture, massage therapy, yoga, and at the core, nutrition. Each woman gets a container with a yoga mat, a nutrition guide, and $2,000 worth of vouchers for services that include a weekly box of organic vegetables from Lancaster Farm Fresh, a cooperative of Pennsylvania farmers.
Nutrition, to me, is at the core. We so don't realize how our food is impacting our health. I think we realize it, but we don't do anything about it. So we get these women excited about real food again and cooking and knowing how to make simple dishes.
We're standing here in front of peanut butter. I think that this is a great little test tool.
Katie Cavuto knows food from two angles. She's a graduate of Johnson & Wales, one of the nation's leading chef training schools, and she's also a registered dietitian. Among the services her company Healthy Bites offers, Cavuto accompanies clients to the market to give them nutrition tips and visits their homes to cook with them. She's also the chief nutritionist for Unite for Her, which is how I met her. My wife Susan is a breast cancer survivor who benefited from the Unite for Her program, and Cavuto came to our home to cook 5 of her recipes with us, all within an hour. For this piece, she met with Susan and me again at O'Neill's, a family-owned grocery in Glenside, then came to our kitchen to cook 3 recipes.
What are the ingredients on this organic, natural peanut butter?
Peanuts. That's
peanuts.
It.
That's it.
Wow.
So that is exactly what we want to be looking for in a packaged food.
At O'Neill's, we considered many aspects of products for sale.
Another little tip is looking at the ingredient list and thinking, can I buy all of these ingredients in the store? And if there are ingredients I can't buy in the store, then I think, well, they're not real foods.
We perused the fresh veggies.
Cruciferous vegetables have a lot of cancer-fighting properties.
And the grains.
If you don't have a lot of time, choose a dried lentil. They're quick cooking and actually are higher in protein than some beans.
And the syrups, with a discussion that surprised me.
In the quote-unquote maple syrup we all grew up on, there is not even the word maple in the ingredient list.
Wow.
So grabbing another brand here, this actually says 100% pure, all-natural maple syrup.
Yes, it does.
Wow.
And what are our ingredients? The ingredients are actually maple syrup.
find everything okay?
We did.
Once we're home, Cavuto takes over the kitchen and we're her sous chefs for three dishes she often makes with Unite for her clients. We put together a quinoa salad, a baked salmon filet with a mustard and maple syrup glaze, and an eggy frittata full of veggies. While we cook, Cavuto, the chef, talks about her practice as Cavuto, the nutritionist.
I started Healthy Bites with the goal to really give people the tools they needed to implement lifestyle changes versus just giving them the information. So by going to the grocery store, by coming into people's homes and actually cooking with them, I'm providing them the tools they need to implement lifestyle changes instead of just information.
She's extended that goal to helping breast cancer survivors in particular.
Oh, this quinoa salad. The quinoa salad's wonderful.
After Cavuto leaves to meet a client, we have lunch. As a cancer survivor, Susan has become intensely interested in the foods that will keep her strong, sparked by Unite for Her. For me, there's a byproduct. Good cooking and good eating. For WHYY, I'm Howard Shapiro.
Slightly crunchy. We did it the right way.
Finally this evening, many in our audience were moved by our story about inmates at a Philadelphia City prison carpentry shop who are making a chair for Pope Francis to sit on during his upcoming visit. On Facebook, Frank Hoffman commented, "A handsome chair indeed, yet appropriately simple for this pope. And as mementos go, it beats a Liberty Bell paperweight." Sandra Violet agreed, saying, "I'm sure the men who have crafted the chair are feeling mighty proud of their honest work." And Chris Randolph saw a bit of symbolism in this gift to the pontiff, who opposes capital punishment, noting, "Hopefully he talks to America about not giving inmates the chair." You can add your comments on this or any of our stories via Facebook or on Twitter at NewsWorksWHYY. That's all for tonight's show. NewsWorks Tonight is produced by Shai Ben-Yaakov and Kimberly Haas, with help today from Alex Lewis. Listen again to a story or catch up on a missed show via podcast or online at NewsWorks.org. Philadelphia's Fringe Festival is almost upon us. On tomorrow's show, we preview the theater, concerts, and general arts mayhem that'll be taking over the city for the next several weeks. Thanks for joining us. I'm Brad Linder for NewsWorks Tonight.
Friends Life Care, a subsidiary of Friends Life Care Partners, supports WHYY. Friends Life Care is a member organization designed for people who want to remain independent in their own home. Membership helps protect savings and prepare for unexpected changes in health. A plan is in place if care is ever needed. A nonprofit, Quaker-based organization since 1985, Friends Life Care offers educational seminars throughout the region. Details at friendslifecare.org.